Session number 8727, row number 1.
Colonel Henry Edward Short, Reel 1. What were you doing when war broke out?
I had just qualified as a medical man. Just qualified.
Where did you qualify?
In Aberdeen University.
What did you decide to do when the war broke out?
Well, I immediately joined the Indian Medical Service, which was a service which about 600 British officers, British and Indian, serving the whole of India, military, civil, administration, everything practically.
Why did you decide to join the Indian service?
Because my father had been in India, and I followed on. And that is the history of many of the families who worked in India.
Had you lived in India as a child? Had you lived in India as a child?
Only as a child, yes. I was born in India. And like all European children, we were sent home for our education. And I spent my early days as a boy in Scotland, in the Highlands, in Inverness. And from there, after school, I went to Aberdeen University to study medicine. That took 5 years. Then the war broke out.
Would you have joined the army anyway?
I was going to join in any case. Yes.
What happened to you then when the war broke out?
I'm sorry to be so deaf, it's my...
What happened to you when the war broke out?
I was sent with a large part of the Indian Army. Most of the Indian Army people on leave in this country or out of India were collected together, and we went out, most of us, in one or two big transport ships. The one I was in docked in Karachi in the north of India. From there I went down to Bombay by sea and then joined a cavalry regiment. Not immediately, you know, but within a matter of a week or two.
Did you
quite new, quite inexperienced.
You were quite inexperienced.
Well, yeah.
You had only just qualified.
I'd only just qualified.
So it was your first job.
Yes.
What was your job? What was your job?
I was appointed to an Indian infantry regiment. But transferred almost immediately to a cavalry regiment, which was preparing to go on service. And it will be from there I can begin, I think. My regiment was the 33rd Cavalry, and we embarked on a ship called the Srafala, carrying the whole regiment, all its horses, camels, transport, stores, everything, bound for Basra in Mesopotamia. Basra, you know, is on the Shat al-Arab River. Well, we were sitting at lunch one day when suddenly everything on the table began to go sideways. Cutlery, crockery, everything, with a bang. So we all rushed up on deck and found that our ship, which was only one in a long line of transports, carrying, going up the river Chat al Arab towards Basra. Oh, I should think nearly a third or a half of the whole Indian army, of every kind, cavalry, infantry, gunners, everything. Our ship, this bang, had rammed into the ship in front of it. They were stuck together. And we stopped all the ships behind us. Might have been a real calamity. Now we had 400 or 500 horses down in the hold. The captain sent the carpenter of the ship, who was a Chinaman, down the hold to see what damage had been done. And the Chinaman came running up, panic-stricken. 4 feet of water in the hold, sir. The captain, thinking of all these horses down there, immediately ran the ship ashore on the bank of the river. And we were stuck. We kept all the ships behind us stuck also. Fortunately, it wasn't so bad because the river was a tidal one. And when the tide rose, we were able to back off the sandbank on which we had stuck. The only excitement was the exchange of polite nautical language between the two crews. Well, that was the beginning of the war, as far as I was concerned.
Where were you bound for?
Lebon?
Where were you bound for?
We were bound for Basra on the Chat al Arab. Now, let me see how far. The funny part really was that the Chinaman made a mistake in saying 4 feet of water in the hold, because he came up a second time. He said, "Me making mistake. I sound freshwater tank." However, that's about my...
What was happening at Basra?
Well, what happened then... We got off, as I say, from the bank. And we reached Basra without any special incident. And perhaps now I should describe a little of the country. Now that... The nature of the country, the best description I can give, I think, was in the words of a soldier who happened to be passing my tent. The tent flap was open. I heard him. And he described the country as miles and miles and miles of sweet Fanny Adams. You won't know what I mean. And a river running through it. And then it was raining. I could hear him squelching through the water as he walked. And he said, "No wonder Moses lost his followers in this bloody country." That was the description. Now, it was very different in the desert. In the desert, it was very, very dry, very, very hot, blazing hot in the daytime, and chilly cold at night, owing to evaporation in the dry air. You can imagine the truth of the description in the Bible of the comfort of a great rock in a weary land the shadow of a great rock in a weary land. Now, many things, do you want me to go on? Many things, of course, we found very different in a new country, new to us, new to most of us. For instance, in the river, although it was a fresh water, sharks were quite numerous. We were about 80 miles from the sea, but the sharks came up the river. One day, Colonel Christopher and I were bathing in the river, not in the main river, but in a creek which flowed into the river. And we saw a crowd of Arab children gathering on the bank of this creek opposite us. They became a little annoying, and I shouted out to them, "What are you doing there? Go away." And they said, "We're waiting." And they said, "What are you waiting for?" Mind you, I could talk Arabic. I'd learned it before. And they said, "We're waiting for the sharks to get you." Well, Christopher and I thought they looked as if they really meant it, so we quickly swam out. Now, there's a sequel to that. A few days afterwards, I was in hospital for some minor complaint. And in the bed next to mine was a soldier. I asked him, "Why are you in hospital?" Oh, he said, I'm in here for a shark bite. And he said, "We were bathing from a boat, I and some others, and a shark got hold of my leg. And I was only saved by my comrades beating at a shark and pulling me into the boat." He had a very badly lacerated leg. That was very interesting. So it was a sequel to what we might have suffered. Now, let me see what I'm... Well, it took us, when we reached Basra, it took us some time to get the horses, which had been some weeks in the hold, fit for work. And we didn't do very much. Our first experience was a reconnaissance to see the strength of a Turkish force, which was a mile or some miles upriver from Basra, lined along a creek. We had no intention of attacking it, but just to find out. When we came near to this line of Turks, they were in a line on one side, we were in a line on the other. And they began to fire, a small round, rifle fire from. Suddenly at one end on the right flank, there appeared a huge wild boar. And it ran right along the between the two lines, everybody on both sides firing very inaccurately. And the wild boar escaped on the next flank with a flick of its tail, a derisive flick.
Were you given training in were you given training in rifle firing?
On what?
Were you given training in firing, shooting? Did you have training for shooting?
Yes. Oh yes. I'd been accustomed to rifles from that side. My father was a great rifle shot. Now, our regiment was now removed from Basra 3 or 4 miles upriver to a place called Magil, where we were camped in a date grove on the bank of the river. And here we were subject to nightly fire. Arabs which were working as labor in the camp at night from the among the date trees, they kept up a sniping fire at the camp. And we slept in tents. I mean, we slept in trenches which were dug inside our tents in order to keep away odd bullets. Of course, the camels we had couldn't be disciplined, stuck their heads up above, and one of them got one of these bullets in the neck. That was that. And next day, as medical officer, I had to dispose of the corpse. Well, you couldn't dig it into the ground because the water table was only a foot or two above the surface. So we had to drag it out into the desert beyond the line of trees where jackals and vultures would dispose of it. Now, from this camp, we made daily forays in platoon strength. That would be about a company, say, into the desert, just see what was happening, what was there. And in one of these, we came on a party of Turks who opened fire upon us. Our commander of this platoon was Major Anderson, and he decided immediately to attack the Turks. They were dotted about in scrub country. You could hardly see a man here and there. You couldn't really. They were not anything. Anyhow, he ordered our platoon to charge the area where they were. And it started just like as if it had been on the parade ground. Trot, canter, gallop. Very quickly we were right in among the Turks, but they simply scattered and you couldn't see them in the bushes and all the rest. So we didn't bother to follow them up. I saw one Turk firing at us from behind the bush. I jumped off my horse, threw the reins to my orderly, and seized hold of this man's rifle. And we had a tug of war. I was only using one hand, but I had a revolver in the other. And suddenly, a blinding flash in my face. Didn't know what it was. Temporarily blinded. And, as soon as I could see, I had a hold of the Turk's rifle. He was lying on the ground. I could have shot him, but I didn't because he was unarmed then. And he let him go. Major Anderson, when I rejoined the rest, he said he was astonished how easily his sword had gone through a Turk. He said it was just like going through butter. He was so astonished. And it was. When we got back to camp, for the first time, I realized what had happened with this flash in my face, because the whole of my face was pocked with unburnt grains of powder from the discharge. It must have been just right past my head. And these were picked out of my face one by one by our Indian assistant surgeon. Now, shall I just go on like this? Well, from this camp, we were now transferred to a camp in the desert at a place called Shaiba, which was about 12 miles from Basra. This was a very bleak area, no trees, no vegetation practically. The only water supply was from wells in the desert. And from many of these, the water was so brackish that the horses wouldn't drink it. That's kind of a very bleak place. And life was rather dull there. Nothing was happening. Until we were told, got orders to make a reconnaissance in strength to find out how far away, how big the concentration of the Turkish force was. And this reconnaissance was to be carried out by the cavalry. And the cavalry was our own regiment, my regiment, the 33rd, and another regiment of cavalry, the 16th Cavalry. These together were set out towards the direction of where the Turks were supposed to be. Well, we went for about 15 miles without meeting anything of any kind. It wasn't much object in going further, and we got the order to retire back to our main camp at Shaiba. Now this, when we suddenly started to go back again, this was taken as a sign of weakness and was a signal for the sudden appearance of absolute hordes of Arab cavalry, if you can call them cavalry. They had no order, no discipline, but they were far outnumbering our force. And they were under no sort of control. They were simply single units. They were just like scattering pepper. They were so numerous, all out of sight up to us. Being not in formations, single units, two or three at a time, they didn't dare to come to real close quarters with the cavalry because we were compact and ready for them. But they kept the whole time and getting in more and more numerous all the time. Now, our withdrawal commenced, was done in perfect order. One squadron of the cavalry dismounted, took up a defensive position, while the remainder went back in the direction of our camp. Then, when they'd gone some distance, the squadron which had dismounted rejoined the main body, and another squadron then took their place, and it continued like this towards the camp, bit by bit by bit, different squadrons taking the defensive position. When we were about 3 or 4 miles from our camp, it began to get very sticky indeed, because you couldn't start to count the number of Arabs there were, but they were all individual units. And so our casualties were comparatively few. And the mere numbers were very difficult to cope with. Our officers were really splendid, because our troops were all Indians, remember. The adjutant, a man called Collins, Captain Collins, He galloped about shouting, "Rally 33rd, rally 33rd. This kept our squadrons still compact as real units without scattering. If they had scattered, it would have been a desperate position because there were so many of the Arabs. And then this was the position when suddenly there broke out a sustained volume of small arms fire, completely astonishing us, astonishing the enemy. And what had happened was a British regiment had been sent out from our camp to meet our return. And they had been so well dispositioned in the ground that neither the Arabs nor ourselves were aware of them until this rifle broke out. Well, that was too much for the Arabs. They suddenly came upon a really disciplined force of infantry. Then they simply disappeared. Within, I suppose, 15 minutes, there was nothing but a departing cloud of dust as they all went off. Well, now it was time to see what had happened as a result of all this miles of going back and back and back. May I just see?